This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, as well as in the evenings on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to have you with us today, Matt and Patrick, flying solo today. Well, Patrick's here. Sounds like the song I'm All Alone from Spamalot. Patrick and I are here, but I'm by myself. You are more than welcome to call in at any point today, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick, how are you, my friend?
Doing well. We got out to the Twins game yesterday. You will not have a better day to be outside.
Oh, today? We're in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Chicago, but it's gorgeous today. And it's one of those things where it's Minnesota, so what happens is it all hits at once. And so all of a sudden it's like, okay, because I've always wondered why in the world that they would ever put an NCAA tournament game in Minnesota, a basketball game, because everything is dead, wet, and dirty with sand. And then all of a sudden one day, boom, it's everywhere. As a matter of fact, if you want to see some photos, I went on out the Minnesota Arboretum. They had their tulips up. I took some pictures of that. The flowering trees are starting to go here in Minnesota. I was down in Chicago at the beginning of the last month. It was gorgeous down there. It was really starting to get pretty down there. So I hope you're getting a chance to get on out and enjoy things. It is a nice time of the year. Although, you know, down south of us tonight, down Oklahoma, Texas, that area, sounds like a real chance of some heavy duty storm. So, just be advised. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I have to start off the show today by probably... Was I wrong? Borderline. But I will say this. I do want to make sure I clarify for our listeners in South Dakota that, no, this is not anything. When I said what I said on social media, I wasn't saying this as a dog on you guys. It's just the reason why Kristi Noem is who she is. Okay, so in case you missed this weekend, Kristi Noem went on out there. There's two sides to the Kristi Noem coin. Now, reminder, this is a woman who released book excerpts she was very proud of to The Guardian, where she talked about shooting her dog in the face at the gravel pit and then threw a goat in there for good measure. And she did this thinking this is going to be the tough guy. Everybody solves all their problems with guns, you know, sort of mentality. And that's what it was. And she had no idea that apparently a lot of people are not big fans of the vice president shooting someone in a dog in the face with a gun. And a goat for good measure. Because once again, notice how the goat has kind of, all of a sudden, they don't want to talk about the goat. Why? Because the goat turns her into a freaking psychopath. The goat turns her into a psychopath. I mean, how many other animals did she shoot at the gravel pit? I mean, really, she's nutsoid. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So this weekend, she tried to, I guess she was trying to make points with Republicans. Wants to be the person to shoot. Gleefully talked about how she wants to be the person to shoot President Biden's dog Commander in the face, because apparently he's bit a few Secret Service people. And so, you know, needless to say, someone needs to shoot in the face. And I know she said this. She said this because she's trying to appeal to the Republican base that wants to shoot the president's dog. That's really what it is. There's no other reason for her to do that. She's trying to say, hey, you know how you fantasize about shooting the president's dog? Well, I'd actually do it. to try to win over that base. But then there's this whole thing with Kim Jong-un, who she basically lied about meeting the North Korean dictator. But she lied about it and put this in the book. And there comes a point, okay, so wait a second here. And this is something ever since a week ago last Friday when I started tearing into Kristi Noem, I said, okay, did nobody proofread this book? No one outside of her tight little South Dakota inner circle? And I don't think they did. I don't think the publisher did. I don't think, because, okay, on the one side, the dog story, why would anyone who wants to have a candidate that appeals to the masses, why would you allow that story to go into that book? No idea. And I think that if you, even if you had sent it to multiple people out of the state of South Dakota to review this book, the first thing is like, you know, that story about the dog is a little rough. Are you sure that needs to be in there? Or, okay, I guess maybe they did. And, you know, she's like, nope, this is good quality. But no one looked at her. I mean, I had a boss when I worked at a radio station. I was working Top 40 Radio down in Ames, Des Moines. And I had a boss down there who, with this is Iowa State University. So it's a university. And we were talking about what our big summer concert was going to be. And she came in with a big beaming smile on her face. And she said, Yanni. And every one of us on the station staff, like, no, Yanni appeals. And this is back in the 90s, appeals to like 45-year-old women, not college girls. And she was stunned, I say. That basically that not every college girl in America is jonesing for Yanni, which is just a weird thing to say, but it is the truth. We had to kind of Betty, no, you don't know. No, we cannot do this. And she was stunned by that. She was absolutely stunned by it. Maybe this is the same thing, is that she's like, no, I don't care what you're saying. Everyone's going to love the dog story. And no. And grateful, you know, I'm grateful in the Yanni story we were able to talk her out of that. But maybe she just didn't have people around her. Kristi Noem didn't have people around her to talk her out of the whole concept of, oh, yes, you know, we're going to have the dog shooting story. It's the Kim Jong-un story that tells me, okay, did nobody proofread this? Now, once again, I have said, I've had multiple friends ask me to proofread books for them. I'm glad to do it. It's something I enjoy doing. And they want me to bring in some level of expertise that I am aware of into the book. And there are some excerpts or some chapters that they say, particularly pay attention here and tell me if you see anything wrong. Now, if it's a work of fiction, you know, then that's, you know, that's perfectly fine. It's just, you know, things here. But if it's something that is an actual nonfiction book, factual, if anybody of any merit had proofread that, the first thing when they got to this, it's like, okay, when exactly did you meet Kim Jong-un? When did you say this? When did you do this? And there was, she said, I can't talk about it. So, well, if you can't talk about it, it shouldn't be in the book. It was secret. Well, if it's secret, it shouldn't be in the book. When did you meet him? And nobody clearly did this. So it was because of that statement. And once again, I don't know. Part of me thinks to myself, she is done with consideration for the VP candidate. But on the other side of it, the way that that party is running right now, if the people, I mean, like I said, that line about the President Biden's dog this weekend was designed to rally the lunatic fringe MAGA heads. The guys that are like, who see there, wouldn't it be great if we could shoot the president's dog? Those guys. She's trying to rile those people up to contact and basically say, see, the psychopaths love me. By the way, use that for a promo for the show. You see, the crazed folks adore me. There you go. Bon appetit. But that's the case. She didn't have anyone read this. And there is an element to this, which I can tell you about, because I've lived in small towns. I've lived in rural America. I make the point here, and this is a social media post I made, you know, yesterday morning. Once again, this is because she's from South Dakota. She can say things like this and people will not fact check her and will be impressed. It's not like her lies come out of the South Dakota bubble that she suddenly looks like an idiot. And I stand by that, although it probably wasn't as eloquent or as lengthy as I wanted to, but it was a social media post. But needless to say, I stand by my point, but I realize I probably need to clean this up a little bit. So let me do that for the folks of South Dakota. First of all, apologies if I offended you. I didn't mean to make it sound like no one there has freaking electricity. I didn't mean to make it sound like that. But I know there are fantastic people reporting the news in South Dakota. If I may, Sally Jo Sorensen over at Blue Stem Prairie is a freaking gem. She is a freaking gem, a gem. If you're not following Blue Stem Prairie, you're wrong. Not only does she cover a lot of rural Minnesota stuff, but she covers a lot of stuff in South Dakota too. And so she's there. Multiple. Is McClatchy is one of the groups that is there that they kind of give me some pushback on this, said, hey, that's not right. I'm not saying there are people there who are reporting on this clown car and have been reporting on her from day one. North Dakota is not necessarily a bellwether state for news unless the news forces its way out of there. And there have been plenty of stories about Kristi Noem, and I have seen them because Chicago, you might not have been aware of it, but because of the nearness to South Dakota from Minnesota, I have been aware of some scandals over there that just have never gotten any national traction. Not that they didn't deserve national traction. It's just what happens is that the local major news media outlets in South Dakota, they shy away from this stuff. They know they sell advertisements, and the advertisements are generally bought by the local conservatives, and henceforth, they don't want to report the bad stuff. You know, I can point you in the direction of Denny Sanford in North Dakota. Don't even get me into that. Holy God. But they don't want to report what is really going on in these stories. And so it's not getting covered by the major affiliates of the national news. And at that point, they're not getting any news up there. So that's where it kind of dies. It dies because Kristi Noem, through her Republican connections, can somewhat control what news comes out of South Dakota. And that's the case. It doesn't mean everybody in South Dakota is on board with her. Absolutely not. I've heard from multiple people saying she's horrible. I live here. I can't stand her. It's not that there aren't people out there that are reporting on her. Blue Stem Prairie, other news outlets, God bless you. You're doing yeoman's work out there. It's just you're running uphill. It happens here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, too. Conservatives control a lot of the Twin Cities media, with as liberal as this town is. You know, there is a way that they do their best to try to keep this stuff quiet and prevent it from getting out. I didn't mean to make it sound like people weren't doing their due diligence up there or that everyone was on board. But clearly, she did not think that these stories would be a burden if she went national with them. I'll take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday, 952-946-6205. So once again, South Dakota, no offense. I mean, it wasn't, there are people there, but it just, you know, it really is amazing how well Republicans control message. It is. As a matter of fact, I've said that it's one of the main reasons Republicans have been able, with a minority, to control so much of the narrative in this country, is that they are so on point about message. You could be, I can't tell you how many times, you can be a progressive radio broadcaster. I know probably guys in Chicago get this sometimes too, where you'll call up somebody and say, hey, you know, who's a Democrat? And you'll say, you know what? Hey, would you like to do an interview? And like, I don't know. It's, boy, oh boy, talking to the base of my party. I don't know. And it's just frustrating. Meanwhile, Republicans, you can go to the very southern part of Illinois, the very southern part, and get a call from a radio station in, say, Rockford, who's a conservative radio station, and they say, hey, is someone available for an interview? They'll say, when and where? I'll be right there. It's amazing how well Republicans control message. And I'm not saying this in a, you know, wow, isn't this fantastic? It's a stunning comment because they tamp down this stuff. And in a place like South Dakota, where there's far more conservatives than progressives, yeah, they're able to tap this stuff down. The problem for Kristi Noem is she didn't think at all that this would be a problem on the national stage. And she's getting chewed up by it. She's clearly not ready for the prime time, and that's on her. So, but once again, I don't want to imply that there aren't people in South Dakota who are indeed trying to report this news, as well as also not everyone in South Dakota is on board with Kristi Noem. All right. Let's get into the Trump trial. There is a fatal flaw to Trump, it's got to be, being one of his lawyers has got to be one of the toughest things. I'll get to that here in a little bit. The judge overseeing Trump's criminal trial in Manhattan rebuked the former president on Monday for mounting a direct attack on the rule of law, holding him contempt of court for a second time, threatening to jail him if he continued to break the gag order that bars him from attacking jurors. In a moment of remarkable courtroom drama, the judge, Merchan, addressed Trump personally from the bench, saying if there were further violations, he might bypass financial penalties and place the former president behind bars. The justice acknowledged that jailing Trump was the last thing he wanted to do, but explained that it was his responsibility to protect the dignity of the justice system. The judge said he understood the magnitude of such a decision and that jailing Mr. Trump would be the last resort. He noted, "You are the former president of the United States and possibly the next president as well." As the judge delivered his admonishment and imposed a $1,000 fine on Trump, Trump stared straight at him, blinking but not reacting. And the remarks, moreover, the former president shook his head. It was the second time in 2 weeks that Trump had been punished for breaking the gag order, which also bars him from attacking prosecutors, witnesses, and others along the violations with Mr. Trump has been accused. The violation which he is punished in, and basically there it's to protect the people that are not in the courtroom and the jury for that matter. The violation of which he was punished on Monday stemmed from an incident on April 22nd when Trump made disparaging remarks about the jurors during a telephone interview with far-right media outlet Real America Voice. The jury, he said, had been picked so fast, it's mostly all Democrats, adding, it's a very unfair situation. Well, you're in New York City. Of course it's going to be mostly Democrats. I mean, I've always loved the conservatives. Well, unless you take him to the most conservative county in West Virginia and they find him guilty, it's clearly a fraudulent trial. I still think there's a 50-50 chance they'd convict him in West Virginia, but that's the case. By the way, it should be noted that after this, that Trump was raising money off of the judge's stern warning. Today was kind of sausage making in regards to the court case. Jeffrey McConney, a former corporate controller of the Trump Organization, testified for about 3 hours on Monday about the repayment of hush money deal that was made in the final days of the 2016 election to Stormy Daniels, the porn star who claimed to have had sexual encounter with Trump. The repayment is at the center, or who had? I mean, we don't have to claim. I mean, she had. The repayment is at the center of the 34 felony counts against Trump. Daniels was paid by Michael Cohen, Trump's former fixer, who was reimbursed after Trump was elected president. McConney testified that most of the repayment in 2017 originated from Trump's personal bank account. Some checks were sent to the White House for Trump to sign, that's interesting. McConney worked as a corporate controller for the Trump Organization. Prosecutors say he helped arrange the reimbursements for $130,000 hush money payment to Stormy Daniels, whose long claimed to have an affair with Trump. Jeffrey McConney, didn't he, in comments, make comment? I think he did actually admit it at one point. Jeffrey McConney is testifying about a hugely important documentary evidence only barely disguised by the financial documents and handwritten notes on the screen. We just now learned that the payment came from Trump's personal bank account. It appears we are. So this whole idea, I had no idea. It came from your bank account. It appears we are about. I mean, it's the difference between, do you work for a company? Did a check come from your company or come from your own personal bank account? Because that's not a bookkeeping error. I mean, the whole thing the conservatives keep trying to make an argument of is this is a simple bookkeeping error. It's not anything like that. I mean, it's clearly this was by design. I mean, it's A bookkeeping error would be like, oh, I got to write a check out. Oh, I wrote a check on the work one. I had to void this and destroy it, and then I got to write one here. That's a bookkeeping error. This is clearly was designed to keep things off the books. It appears we are about to see that the invoices Cohen sent for the payment were prompted by Cohen's conversations with Alan Weisselberg and an agreement again that Cohen will testify and confirm with Trump. Email Boves largely hauled to file a cross-examination of McConney, challenge facing Trump's lawyers. Again, becomes clear they're basically doing a version of he didn't do it, and even if it did, it's not a crime. That works in a political trial and his first impeachment, but it's a criminal case involving a lot of pretty clear evidence of his wrongdoing. Since the client here, Trump, never wants his lawyers to cede any ground to whether he did anything questionable, the defense lawyers are left with this jumble. And I'll come back to that here. Deborah Tarasoff testified in Trump's criminal trial on Monday. She was this afternoon's witness. She's a former accounting department employee of the Trump Organization who is believed to have played a significant role in the reimbursement of the hush money payments ahead of the trial, at the center of the trial, I should say. She was asked in February 2017 by senior Trump Organization employees to send $35,000 checks to Michael Cohen, Mr. Trump's longtime fixer, to the statement of facts filed by the prosecutors as part of Mr. Trump's indictment. Prosecutors say those checks were to repay Cohen the $130,000 he gave the porn star Stormy Daniels in the final days of the campaign. Tarasoff says that Trump had to sign all the checks from his personal account even after he became president and was living in D.C. She says they were sent by FedEx. She added that Trump signed the checks. She could eventually get them back. Christopher Conroy, the prosecutor, is emphasizing Tarasoff's point that only Trump could sign checks from his personal account. He's surprisingly halting as his questioning is moving slowly, thumbing through the binder of the lectern between questions. So not exactly the most exciting stuff, but once again, you're creating not only a clear path of Trump to Cohen to Stormy Daniels, but now, once again, you've got this. It came from his personal bank account. And so personal that, you know, this idea that he couldn't have known about it, he's the only one that could sign the checks for that. And she talked about how he had his little Sharpie that he does and does that, you know, psychopathic signature that he does. Yeah. He did it. Yep. He did it. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evenings on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk and in the afternoons on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show once again here on your Monday, 952-946-6205. Here's the problem for these guys is that I want to go back to the one thing that they were talking about in the cross-examination of the first guy, where the problem is that Trump basically he wants his lawyers to, you know, never wants his lawyers to cede any ground as to whether he did anything questionable. The defense lawyers are left with a jumble because, you know, what they're doing is presenting evidence that Trump indeed did stuff wrong. You know, questionable, legal, whatever the case may be. He undoubtedly has done these things. And yet his whole thing is he didn't do it. And even if he did, it's not a crime. And it's tying up his hands. It's this idea that you can, you know, kind of you're out of order. I'm not out of order. You're out of order, you know, kind of thing. And like everyone's like, oh, I guess I am out of order. I'm so sorry. You know, defense. He thinks he is smarter than everyone else about anything. You know, he thinks that he knows more about medicine than doctors who have spent their lives studying medicine. He tried to say that he knew more about hurricanes than the National Weather Service. He's looking at his lawyers and he doesn't even know how to finish a freaking coloring book, let alone read a law book. And yet he goes in there and says, I know exactly what I'm going to do. You're going to do it like this. And his lawyers are stuck basically having to carry around his large carcass, orange carcass. So, it's entertaining to watch this because, I mean, they've got him dead to rights at this point. I mean, all these people are in there. It's like, yep, came from him. And his defense of nuh-uh is not going to fly because they have the evidence. And he's not, my guess is, you know, 20 minutes before the jury hands back the guilty verdict, he'll say, okay, fine, I'll plead guilty, but I get no punishment whatsoever. And you still say I'm the prettiest, most handsome little baby boy you've ever seen. Yeah, nope. Now you want the courts to lie, Donald. Stop it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's get away from Donald Trump and find even something more disturbing. Texas. Oh, God. A Texas man is seeking a court order so he can depose a woman he was dating who traveled to Colorado to get an abortion in a case that might have ramifications in the ongoing legal battles over abortion rights. Colin Davis, the resident of Brazos County, filed a legal petition in March stating that on February 20th, the day after he learned the woman intended to obtain an abortion, he retained an attorney who sent the woman a letter requesting that she preserve all records related to her plans to terminate the pregnancy. According to the petition, the letter warned that he would pursue wrongful death claims against anyone involved with killing his unborn child. Davis argues that the deposition is necessary to determine whether there was a violation of Texas's wrongful death statute, which the petition references alongside with Texas Civil Code that includes among those defined as individuals as an unborn child at every stage of gestation from fertilization until birth. His petition additionally points to Texas's civil enforcement 6-week abortion ban known as SB 8. The woman filed a petition for court records to be sealed so her identity would remain anonymous. Her attorney told CNN she began dating Davis in November of 2023 and found out that she was pregnant in January, according to the petition. The case, which was reported on by the Washington Post on Friday, is being cited by abortion rights supporters who fear that anti-abortion advocates will use, or at least threaten to use, strict abortion laws to target abortions obtained even in states where the procedure is legal. Which, by the way, I'm that's going to be an interesting argument. Okay, so let me step back here. One of the reasons why I want to go back to the time in pre-Civil War in this country and what was kind of going on with the South, that you had free states in the North that were basically, you could not have slaves. But, and I was just as stunned by this as anyone else. I couldn't believe this was going on, but it was. Southerners, these wealthy Southern plantation owners, were buying up lots of land in northern states as kind of private residences, and they would bring their slaves with them. And so this was becoming a common problem where you had states where slavery wasn't illegal, was illegal, but you had slave owners with slaves treating them as slaves in free states. And you had communities, and this I can say this for a fact about Minnesota for sure. There were communities in this state who were very much pro-slavery because there was a lot of money to be made from these Southern plantation owners coming up here during the summer to get away from the heat of the South and tolerating slavery here. And this was an ugly thing. There came the Dred Scott case, which also kind of ran back to Minnesota because Dred Scott was a slave. He came to Minnesota, which was a free state and a free territory at that point, and was working for a military officer at Fort Snelling and henceforth sued the government saying I was supposedly a slave in a free state. Technically I'm free. And that's Dred Scott, one of the worst rulings of all time, saying basically, no, you're never free. And you can't stop slave owners from basically bringing slaves into, you know, other states. And it was to a point where the Southern states were also demanding that when a slave escaped and got to a safe state, that the safe state, even though it was a free state, had to hand that person back over to them. And so there was all this conflict that was going on around slavery that was happening. But it was, you know, as the South tried to argue, it was about states' rights to have slaves. I mean, it was about slavery. They were trying to be clever, and they were just a bunch of stupid racist idiots. but they were trying to sit there and say, oh, it's not about slavery, it's about states' rights. The thing which was funny was their argument basically boiled down to their states' rights superseded other states' rights, that New York and Illinois and Minnesota could not have laws that prevented them from having slaves. And yeah, it was ugly. We are starting to go down this path now with abortion because, and once again, once abortion was, the Roe v. Wade was overturned, many states, including Illinois, and just as reading the state here about the attorney general in Illinois, basically saying the attorney general defending access to reproductive care and protecting patient privacy are among my top priorities. There, you know, Illinois, they can come into Illinois and get an abortion. And when the state says we demand to have the medical records of this individual, they're basically going to give them the, you know, the one finger salute. Same thing goes for Minnesota. You can ask, you ain't going to get it. Because we don't just hand over. And this is where we're starting to get. It's this idea that these viciously anti-abortion southern states, particularly southern states, some in the Mountain West, those states, basically their laws supersede another state's law. I mean, isn't this kind of exactly what we're looking at in regards to the whole, you know, individual states' rights? When Roe v. Wade was overturned, the Supreme Court said it was the state's rights to manage this. But now we're starting to get into an interesting case where does the laws of Texas supersede the laws of Colorado in Colorado? Now, in a normal world, no, it doesn't. Colorado is its own state. Colorado can do whatever they want to. And basically, you can say, well, we think she got an abortion, but she could just say I had miscarriage and that was it. And, you know, that's there's no way for them to have definitive proof. And you're basically going to start prosecuting people. And don't get me wrong. I could see Texas doing this, prosecuting people on pure speculation and locking people up for life because we think you did something wrong. And that is Texas. But it's this idea that Illinois and Minnesota have to hand over when these states get, you know, wait a second here. You need to give us all this information. And that she is somehow responsible for telling them. She doesn't, I mean, they can say, well, where are your medical records? And say, I was in Colorado. They're there. You need, and Colorado's not going to give them over. So this is, and this is where this is going to go. This is an attempt by the fringe far right to take just one state, in this case, Texas, and say that their state laws supersede every other state law. And that was kind of, and once again, let's go back to the Dred Scott decision. That was basically the same thing, that you know, that the slave state laws superseded the laws of non-slave states. And next thing you know, we have a civil war. How'd that go for you? So, oh, that's right. You lost. Too bad. Hey, General Sherman says hi. He loved his trip through Georgia. It was lots of souvenirs. Hope you enjoyed the neckties. This is an interesting place because we're back at this again now. And here we are having someone who's trying this. Now, I would also make the argument, gee willikers, I wonder why this woman did not want to have a child with this guy. Okay. I've got that one out of the way. Texas's law passed in 2021 targets doctors and those involved in facilitating abortions, not the women who undergo the procedure themselves, but opponents say that law uncertainty about restrictions in post-Roe America has intended consequences on intimidating women. So basically, the law that they're trying to say is they're trying to find something that they could prosecute a Colorado doctor for doing something legal there. Davis is seeking a deposition to obtain information about those involved in the abortion, including the identity of the doctor who performed the procedure in Colorado, and he considers filing a lawsuit against all of them, according to court filings. And I will tell you right now, you already know that Supreme Court Justice RV and Supreme Court Justice Five Star Resort are both going to say, yep, Texas supersedes everyone else. How many of the rest of them would? Davis is being represented by Jonathan Mitchell, a well-known lawyer, and abortion rights opponent who has been represented, who's represented former President Trump in his Colorado ballot case. Mitchell helped craft SB 8, also known as the Texas Heartbeat Act, which uses a novel civil enforcement mechanism to prohibit abortions after fetal cardiac activity is detected, a point usually around 6 weeks of pregnancy. Davis cited the law in his petition to the deposition. CNN has reached out for Davis to comment. Mitchell has said in the statement, fathers of the aborted fetuses can sue for wrongful death in states with abortion bans. Even if the abortion occurs out of state, they can sue anyone who paid for an abortion, anyone who aided or abetted the travel, and anyone involved in the manufacture or distribution of an abortion drug. The case is seen by some abortion right advocates as an example of the new legal landscape facing women who wish to obtain an abortion. And by the way, we haven't even gotten to the point of interstate commerce laws, which you say you cannot stop other people from, you know, taking advantage of stuff that's legal in another state. We don't think there's basis for a lawsuit, said Mark Heron, an attorney at the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is representing the woman. It is perfectly legal to leave Texas or any state to go get an abortion in a state where it is legal, and it's perfectly legal to offer help someone to be involved in someone going out of state to obtain an abortion where the law is allowed. So, but this is, once again, in this modern world we live in, this is a little bit crazy. David is in St. Paul, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Welcome in, David.
Hey, Matt, thanks for taking my call. I just, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but during COVID, Trump left it up to the states for them to find their own, to find their own respirators, to find their own medical equipment, yep, to find their own, you know, like, and that turned out to be an absolute disaster. And we had the worst health outcomes, you know, for a developed nation. And so he basically wants to turn it into that, just a free for all. And my fear, Matt, is that they're going to take the Comstock Act too, and then they're
okay,
going to
David, I'm going to cut you off. It's interesting that you're getting down this point, because I will say this: it's the individual states there. You're talking about a pandemic, a federal crisis. This is something the Supreme Court has stated for the record is an individual state's right. So and that's, by the way, what all the anti-abortion people applauded. They applauded it being an individual state thing. So now, funny story, a lot of those same guys are, well, no, it should be a federal standard. Hey, Texas, screw you. You're welcome. Love Illinois and Minnesota. That's Matt McNeil Show. It is the Matt McNeil Show. And a reminder, it is Mother's Day week, so get prepared for that. And that's a reminder from the biggest mother you'll ever meet in your life. Hi there. The Matt McNeil Show. So back to the story here about what's going on in Texas. It's unclear where Davis's petition could lead to a lawsuit against the woman herself. Because once again, in Texas, it's not so much there's charges you can file against the woman. It's anyone that helps her or anyone that performs the abortion. And so what their argument is that they want to try to sue someone in Colorado for doing something legal there. Now, by the way, I did think during the commercial break, one thing. Imagine if she basically comes on out and says, well, I slept with three other guys. You don't have no idea if it was your baby. It does kind of negate his, you know, he's saying if it was, you know, it's kind of one of those things. This is clearly someone in Texas trying to say, I need to get this case to the Supreme Court so that the Supreme Court can start buying some vacations and some RVs for these justices and basically say, no, that Colorado doesn't have any right to have the laws that they pass in their state because Texas supersedes them. Once again, a la Dred Scott. So that's but you know, whether or not they, you know, he could sue him in a civil court, I don't have any idea about that. Other Republican states have sought to pressure women against seeking abortions in other states, particularly minors. Idaho's legislature passed a bill later blocked by a judge over constitutionality concerns that would prohibit adults from helping minors across state lines to get an abortion without parental permission. Meanwhile, Tennessee's legislature is advancing a law that would similarly criminalize so-called abortion trafficking for minors in the state. This is all part of the scare campaign to make people afraid that if they go out of state and get an abortion, that they or their loved ones may be sued. We really want to emphasize that people should not be intimidated. Temple University Beasley School of Law Dean Rachel Rabush called Davis's legal maneuver bizarre and concerning, but said it's not surprising. I think that we'll see much more of this in the years to come as long as Dobbs is on the book. And frankly, this is exactly the type of example we should point out when we talk about the Supreme Court should overturn Dobbs. You create this, this patchwork rule. But once again, this isn't about individual states making their own laws. This isn't about that. This is about forcing states to follow the laws of other states. And if they're not going to be able to, and by the way, if I can say, I'm starting to wonder if even the anti-abortion people are realizing that maybe that Supreme Court is not necessarily the slam dunk on a state's rights, versus a federal law sort of thing. And so they're maybe trying to do it this way. It is a mess. It is a mess. And the reality is that this is going to get to the Supreme Court in some capacity. And it's going to be very interesting to see how they rule. And do they say an Illinois doctor is liable for criminal charges in Texas because they performed an abortion on a person they had no idea was from Texas? I shouldn't remind people, too, that multiple states in the South try to look at the legality of ordering women to stay in state if they were pregnant, that you could not leave your state without permission if you were pregnant. And one state even had the idea of sending law enforcement with them to prevent them from getting an abortion if that was the case. It's like if you wanted to go visit a grandparent passing away, they went to a funeral out of state, that you would have to take a local deputy with you that would have to escort you and escort you back. And then people also said, well, that's basically locking people up without cause. So, yeah. One final little note today in the 3 o'clock hour. If you've seen the video from at Ole Miss, the University of Mississippi Ole Miss, fraternity member who directed monkey noises at a black University of Mississippi student during an anti-war demonstration was kicked out of the organization on Friday after the video of the encounter spread on social media. If you have not seen this, this is ugly. Phi Delta Theta General Headquarters is aware of a video regarding a student protest at the University of Mississippi. An organization wrote in the statement on Sunday, the racist actions of the video were those of an individual and are anti-ethical in the values of Phi Delta Theta and the Mississippi Alpha chapter. The responsible individual was removed from membership on Friday, May 3rd. The confrontation took place during student demonstrations at the University of Mississippi, or Ole Miss. On Thursday, protesters gathered to voice their opposition to U.S. support of Israel during the country's ongoing war against Hamas, part of a growing wave of demonstrations. A small group of students chanted Free Palestine and Stop the Genocide. They were confronted by a far larger block of counter-protesters. Videos of the counter showed the counter-group protesting growing aggressive, sounding and yelling at the demonstrators. In a disturbing moment, a white student is seen making monkey noises directed at a black woman and others taunt and cheer. And they all were fine with it, by the way. Every one of those white kids taunting her were perfectly fine with the guy making the racist taunts. Videos of the counter-protests were shared widely on social media, prompted support and adulation from Republicans, including Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves, who, I went up for the racism part. Yes, you were. Yes, you were, you Southern white men. Yes, you were. You were like, yeah, go get them. Go get them. You're like Roscoe P. Cotrain, man. It's gonna, come on, man. Of course you were. You were all for the racism. But I will say this. This kid, he seems to have initially, and Tizzy Ent on social media was tracking this guy. He initially came on out and put out even more racist information, but clearly someone pulled him aside and said, you are about to throw away your life for this. And he wiped away half his social media when he basically deleted a whole bunch of posts on another social media. He's now been kicked out of the chapter. I think, frankly, if you really want to scare all these guys that were at that protest, identify them and make those college degrees they're about to get useless. Seriously, make it useless. Make it to where it's impossible to hire them because when they walk in for a job interview, it's like, aren't you one of the guys that was taunting and making when they were making racist comments towards the black woman at Ole Miss? Oh yeah, that was yeah. Hey, I'm still want to work for you. Doesn't mean that they'll won't get jobs. They'll get jobs with, you know, certain people. But I mean, this is the big fear they have. They desperately want to live that white rural American lifestyle, and if all of a sudden their actions have consequences and they can't, well, maybe that might be a deterrent. Chicago, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two up next. Hour number two of the show here on your Monday, 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Matt and Patrick here. Patrick, we have got after a spectacular victory in Denver last night, there is a chance, or on Saturday night, there's a chance that Rudy Gobert might not be playing tonight. Why? What's up with that?
I believe his kid is possibly going to be born or has been born. There is a possibility. Some reports have suggested he might be able to make it back to Denver in time for the game tonight. It's a little bit of a later start. It's a 9 o'clock central tip-off. So does have a little bit of a window, but obviously we're starting to get kind of in that area where we'll have to find out if he'll be there or not.
All right. We'll have to see. It is a late game there. We'll have to see. They're playing well. Nas Reed, man. They're playing well. Obviously priorities. If that's the case, then, you know, that's the case. We'll have to see, though. And hey, I don't have any problem if he does come out to the game and then halfway through the game he has to leave. I have no problem with that. And, you know, I would hope that the NBA would not have a problem with that either, you know, considering what they're doing. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So it was spectacular this last weekend here in town. I ended up, we've talked a lot about in the last few weeks with the Mitchell case about preparing your family for the end, because what happened with Senator Mitchell is something that happens a lot, is that, you know, his family start just crumbling, especially if there's not really any clear guidance from the deceased on regards to, you know, inheritance and families and who gets the house and who gets the stuff. And you got to kind of do that stuff. Basically what has happened is my mother-in-law is decided she's going to move into a senior home, which is great. She has a house. She's out in Minnetonka. She's going to move into a senior home. And the thing which is really nice is this is giving my wife and her family time to help her kind of get a lot of this stuff set up. Can I say I've lived in my house now for 23 years. In that time, when we moved in, the majority of the homes were still owned by the original owners, and most of them were relatively old. And since then, none of the original owners are still around. And I can't tell you how many times I would see, someone passing away, and then 2 or 3 days later, there's a dumpster in the driveway, and all these things that they had saved and put aside are being chucked into a dumpster. And it's not that it was stuff that was, you know, everything's a family heirloom, for goodness sakes, but I couldn't help but notice in a lot of those cases that I imagine there was some things in there that they specifically wanted people to have and just ended up in the trash. And so it's kind of one of those things where, you know, if I can, once again, having these conversations and having a will and power of attorney and all these things, that is a good thing to have. And I would highly encourage you to get one of that and get that whole things and have those uncomfortable conversations, because it's best to do it beforehand as opposed to just watch your family implode afterwards in the afterlife. No, I think that it's kind of one of those things where it's good to deal with this stuff on the front end. Needless to say, as she was dealing with a lot of that, I was able to get out to the Arboretum, which once again, I posted a bunch of photos on the on the social media pages, some of the pretty flowers out there. Go see it. It's spectacular. Also, I was out. I went out to the Lake of the Isles, which was also just spectacular yesterday. Just beautiful. And yeah, get on out. And by the way, packed to the gills. And I'm going to say this, that water ain't warm, but there are a lot of people out in the water. There are a lot of people paddleboarding and and canoeing and stuff like that. So, yeah, more power to you guys. I hope you had a good time out there. Hope you had a good weekend. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Former President Donald Trump will headline the Republican Party of Minnesota's annual dinner in St. Paul next weekend. That's interesting. And see, that's let me take a look at the calendar here. This is the 17th. So it's a Friday. It's not next weekend. It's the Friday. Minnesota GOP Chairman David Hahn announced Trump as the Lincoln-Reagan dinner keynote speaker today. We are thrilled to welcome President Trump back to the Minnesota headline, our Lincoln-Reagan dinner, an annual tradition that reminds us of the roots of the party and the leaders who have the most impactful for promoting the American values. I can think of no one more fitting to join us this year than President Trump. God. If you're wondering why you can't find knee pads anywhere in the Twin Cities metro area, I got an idea why. Hahn will co-host the event alongside Mr. Whipped himself, U.S. Representative Tom Emmer. The 10-seat package, ticket package for the event ranges from $15,000 to $100,000. And a photo opportunity with Trump included in packages costing $25,000 or more. He was this weekend complaining. He's like, I think we're giving away this stuff way too cheap. So don't be, you might end up, you better get your tickets now or else he might jack the prices up on you. Trump's criminal trial related to alleged hush money payments is entering its third week currently. By the way, and give Patrick credit on this one because he was the one that spotted out this little nugget. Isn't that the day Barron is graduating?
Yes, this is the date that Trump had asked and been granted off from his hush money trial to attend Barron's graduation.
Wait a second here. I mean, this was the most important moment of his life. Barron's graduation. Hey, my son's graduating from college this week. We're taking the entire day. I'm going to go on out there. We got a lot of things we're going to be doing with things. It's a big deal. I'm not flying to another state to do a fundraiser or anything like that because you know what? My son matters to me. That's what it is. You know, want to spend some time, congratulate him and sort of these things. I'm not looking to put the minimum time in. So wait a second here. So do we know where Barron goes to school? I'm guessing it's in New York or something.
I am looking this up right now because I do want to make sure that, you know, it could be something that, you know, maybe it's at noon and, you know, reasonably he can be on a plane by 3 or 4. Of course, he'll gain an hour coming here. It's probably, you know, I'd imagine like a 7 o'clock dinner or something.
Well, I
like
imagine
that.
There's enough people that they would move this stuff around to prevent him from having that question be asked of whether or not he is somewhat, you know, dishonestly, you know, taking time off. We should also check to see if does he have any other campaign events that day. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump took the money from these people in Minnesota and basically ran for the door and said, I can't make it there. I've sent one of my children. I don't know which one it is. One of them is coming out there. They're going to be the keynote. Just give them the money. Great. But it is interesting. We should pay attention. When exactly does he get here into town? And does he go to Barron's graduation? I don't even know what state his school is in.
It looks like it's in Florida, so that does track.
Okay, so it's Florida. Do we know what time of the day? I mean, usually they're early afternoon.
That's what I'm trying to find out. And again, this is nothing. This isn't about Barron. This is about Donald asking for this day off.
Yeah.
That's why we're interested.
Well, I mean, hey, congratulations to the young man. Graduating high school, I believe it is. As he said, he still doesn't even, he's got one daughter he doesn't even acknowledge. But still, I mean, it's the most important people in his life. His kids. Family. How would you feel to be like to be Donald or Don Jr. or Eric and hear him say this? Dad has never had any of my things. Okay, Florida is a different story. If he's down by Mar-a-Lago, that's coming all the way from, that's like a 5-hour flight. So Yeah, I mean, he, you know, if he's going there, he must be jumping on a plane because he loves his son so much that he's going to wave at him as the motorcade drives by. Heads to the airport, jumps on a flight from Miami up to here, and gets here. Well, you know, like you said, you pick up an hour. It's feasible, but he's going to be a little winded. He's going to be a little winded. That doesn't factor in whether or not he has any other fundraising activities, any other golf games, anything else going on in that same window. But hey, we'll probably be. I was at the most beautiful graduation ceremony ever, the most wonderful graduation ceremony. He's my boy. I love Barrow so much. He's such a, like, he's like a wheelbarrow only without the wheel. I can already see the speech. Yeah, he's a horrible human being. Before you come at me, get better candidates. Get better human beings to be your candidate, Republicans. How dare you insult? He's a clown car, for God's sakes. He's a disgrace to humanity.
So, according to this that I just found, again, this isn't, I'm having trouble finding it from the school, but according to this post I found, the graduation is at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern. I'm pretty sure that will not work with a campaign event.
Jesus, I almost sprayed tea all over it. That's a 7 p.m. So get ready for that Lincoln-Reagan dinner where you're going to be, I guess, having Trump showing up at midnight. So you can watch him go to the bathroom and post things on Truth Social. Oh, that'll be magnificent. Magnificent. Okay, once again, and that is the evening. I mean, do we know what the time of the... Well, it's a Friday. It's not like they have the day off. The Lincoln-Reagan dinner's got to be in the evening. It's got to be in the evening.
Yeah, I would imagine, you know, like, you know, 7 o'clock, you know, something like that.
So 6 o'clock Central Time. What's the fastest you could get? No, you don't have to look this up, but just what's the fastest you could get a flight from Florida up here?
I have no idea.
4 hours. Yeah. 4 hours. So let's say he goes through the graduation ceremony. Yeah, there's a slight problem here with the timelines. If that 7 o'clock Eastern time is the right time. If that 7 p.m. Eastern time is the right time, and once again, I would not put it past the school to say, well, we're going to move this forward to make sure the president is not embarrassed. If the graduation's at 7 p.m., there is no way in hell he's going to be able to be here for that dinner. But if he is here for that dinner, he sure as heck was not going to be at the graduation. So, congratulations, Minnesota Republican Party. I'm going to be paying attention to things on the 17th, a week from this upcoming Friday. And if that graduation ceremony is indeed in the evening down in Florida, and he shows up at the Lincoln-Reagan dinner, my guess is the judge is going to have some questions for him come Monday. Good luck with all that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. I'm going to take a little bit of early break. I want to come back because apparently there is a consensus between the city and legislators on a ride-sharing pay scheme, pay level, pay, you know, regulations. And once again, Lyft is throwing a temper tantrum. I'll get to that here in just a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Jay making the point of Donald Trump's golf cart time machine. I'll tell you what, I'm going to find out what time that graduation is for Barron, because if it's in the evening, there's no way in heck he's going to be here. Well, unless he basically is really just trying to thumb his nose at this judge. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see. 9-5. I'm now fascinated about what time that graduation is. And like I said, I have zero doubt that school might fall on a sword for Trump. It's like, we moved the graduation to noon, but still, if the graduation's at noon, well, will they really do him a solid and say, well, before we get to the entire presentation, Barron, come on up here. You got your diploma. Here you are. Bye. I'll talk to you later. Boom. Off he goes. But even if it was at one, I mean, my daughter just graduated high school last year, and that was an hour and a half, about 2 hours. Yeah, it's about 2 hours. So it starts at 1, be 3 o'clock, you know, 2 o'clock local time, and then he has to get to the airport, get on a plane, get here. If he's in southern Florida, that's like 5. He's barely going to get here in time.
Yeah, and I think, although I'll speculate, there are probably a lot fewer students to have to go through across the stage, so it might shorten things up a little bit. I'm not sure, though, what...
Well, when they go across the stage, they get to kick a poor person. So that's always nice. It's the pageantry and majesty of it all, you know? Pomp and circumstance. If you do it in time with the music. Well, never mind. Oh, rich people, you're fun. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. One of the things I have talked about in regards to this whole thing with Uber and Lyft in Minneapolis. Because once again, what happens? Minneapolis passes a minimum wage law for the city. All right, fine. Well, people start noticing, wait a second, the Uber Lyft drivers, they're not getting paid the minimum wage. All right, we need to fix that. Immediately, Uber and Lyft say, we're going to take all our toys and leave the city, because the city comes back and says, and they put forward, if I'm not mistaken, what they had suggested was $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per mile per minute. $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute would be what they were proposing to get up to the minimum wage that they had. The state commission study said $1.21 per mile and 49 cents a minute. So that's kind of where we're at with this. And Uber and Lyft had said, no, you can't raise this. We're going to leave. And so this sent lawmakers into working with the House and Senate, coming together to work with the Minneapolis City Council on this to compromise a much-debated minimum wage proposed for the rideshare drivers. The new agreement announced on Monday would set the statewide minimum wage rate of $1.27 per mile and 49 cents a minute. That follows a vote in April where the City Council voted to delay the start of the newly approved rideshare ordinances, securing Uber and Lyft in the city until July while the wage debate continues. It was refreshing to work with our state leaders who are willing to engage in tough conversations without compromising the core DFL values and making sure every worker, regardless of profession, can earn a minimum wage, said Minneapolis City Council President Elliot Payne in a press release. I'm thrilled that this collaboration between leadership in the Senate and the House and the City Council, along with the city policy's authors, has led to this huge win for rideshare drivers across Minnesota. The wage debate has been months in the making, with nationally known services like Lyft and Uber threatening to pull out of service in Minneapolis after a proposed bill requiring companies to pay drivers $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute for the time transporting the rider, or $5, which is either greater. I'm honored to be carrying the legislation. I'm happy to be working closely with all the stakeholders and the drivers that are treated with respect and paid fairly, said Representative Hassan. In a written statement, this agreement is a win for drivers across Minnesota. Senator Jim Abler, a co-author of the rideshare legislation, said these wages will provide both the drivers and rideshare companies with the stability they need to continue their operation. The amendment to the bill will be introduced in the House Labor and House Finance Policy Committee on Tuesday. Lyft has already sent out a statement. Lyft continues to support the minimum wage earning standard for drivers. However, as was the case with the extremely flawed Minneapolis ordinance, this proposed rates of the state bill would be incredibly damaging to both riders and drivers. Rides would become unaffordable for most across the state, not just in Minneapolis, and drivers would earn even less. It would make their services unsustainable in Minnesota and would be forced to shut down throughout the state. Should it pass, previously Uber and Lyft said they would pull both their services from the city on July 1st. So Lyft is already saying this is a bridge too far. Now, the agreement is $1.27 per mile and 49 cents per minute. So that's substantially less than the original Minneapolis proposal. As a matter of fact, it matches the state number on cents per mile and is only 6 cents higher than the state recommendation of $1.21 per mile. It's $1.27. Once again, compare that to the Minneapolis proposal, which was 51 cents per mile. So it's 2 cents cheaper than that on that. And then $1.40 per mile, so it's 13 cents cheaper there. So it's a compromise. Now, we should understand, and I have said this before when you're talking about this, you have to understand what they're actually saying. Now, Uber, I could not find their current prices on. But apparently Lyft, and this is, I saw this online, so take it with a grain of salt. They were paying 85 cents per mile and 27 cents per minute, which is not close to a minimum wage pay. And they're saying, unless we basically, and this is the entire argument, unless you pay some workers a substandard wage, we're not going to operate here. That's kind of the whole argument. Well, I want to kind of working with if these Lyft numbers are accurate, and I want to be very clear, I'm getting this online, so I can't vouch for them. This is what it says it was. 85 cents per mile and 27 cents per minute. What you're looking at is, say you're going 4 miles and it takes you 7 minutes to go. All right. So 4 miles, and which is, you know, it's, you know, not the furthest trip, but, you know, still, I mean, I think a lot of people would do something like that. I mean, it's definitely something that you, you would kind of keep in mind. So you're looking at, if it's a 4 mile trip, you know, so too far for you to walk, so you need to get an Uber, that's $1.28 extra on the per mile side of it. On the per minute mile side of it, say, once again, it's a 4 minute drive, but it's a 7 minute, it's a 4 mile drive, it's a 7 minute ride. So 0.22 times 7 equals 154. So you're saying to me that if I'm taking a 4 minute drive and it takes 7 minutes to do this with an Uber Lyft, that basically it's going to cost you an additional $2.95 to go that 4 miles. And you say that that's a bridge too far, that people are going to say, no, Matt, 4 miles, an additional $3 whole, even though that's tremendously cheaper than paying for parking or anything like that, and especially in the downtown. You keep implying that there is something that people are going to get, you know, an additional $3, $4, $5 worth of charge on this, and they're just going to be like, I've had it here and I'm leaving. It's the same argument we've had when we raised the minimum wage in the city of Minneapolis, and all the people were like, well, there's not a right, every burger is going to cost $195. No, that never came to fruition. And by the way, I was in Minneapolis this weekend. Every restaurant was packed. The Minneapolis is just jam-packed with people right now. It is absolutely packed. It's a fun time. Come on down. You know, don't worry, far rightos. You can stay out in your tertiary, quadrary suburbs and be terrified gripping your guns in the basement. But hey, we're having a party in the cities. You're welcome to come down if you like. No, this is... not nearly this bridge too far. And I just don't understand when you're looking at $3, $4 extra cost for a standard drive that you think that, oh, that's going to be the deal breaker. Now, what I'm going to do is when I come back, I'm actually going to do a longer trip. I'll do a longer trip just to give us a comparison route. Okay. And we can see what this is going to cost. And I still, to this date, at this point, don't think that this is necessarily the deal breaker that Uber and Lyft think this is. But I should remind everybody, there are plenty of other rideshare companies who are frantically right now trying to get into Minneapolis-St. Paul, who are more than eager to fill the role of Uber and Lyft when those companies throw their temper tantrum and storm out of the city. Bon voyage. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Monday. It is the Matt McNeil Show, AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. So, and by the way, I went back and I found the Lyft because I couldn't find the Uber price, but this is actually from Lyft itself. Pricing for the Minneapolis-St. Paul area rides. It's 85 cents per mile, 27 cents per minute. All right. Now, it's easy to sit there and go, Matt! You're picking up a little four-mile trip. That's no big deal. Most people don't take a four-mile trip. They make a much longer trip. Why aren't you talking about more longer trips? Because it's going to bankrupt. It's going to be $1 billion to take an Uber Lyft. Thanks, Minneapolis. And make sure, once again, I think a lot of the people that are upset about this just don't like the idea of minorities getting a decent paycheck. I'm just being honest about it. But that's just my guess. It's pure speculation. Because this business model is, you know, it's clearly the drivers are getting screwed in this business model. I mean, it's clear they're getting screwed in this business model. Absolutely. So when I sit there and I say, you know, it's $2.93 extra for a 4 mile ride. Is that really going, a four mile, 7 minute ride, is that really going to bankrupt anyone? No, no one's going to shy away from that. But to be fair to the people who desperately want to turn this into something, you know, that this is the greatest injustice, let me pull aside a much longer commute, okay? Let's say you have to go from Minneapolis-St. Paul International to Stillwater, all right? Now, it's going to be mostly highway miles. I mean, you'll jump on 5 right out of the airport and go down to 494, curve that around to 694, go out 36, a few traffic lights. So it's 29 miles. If you're doing 60, 65 miles an hour, it's 30 minutes. Probably be out there. So let's, and I'm doing a lot of math here, and I want to make sure everyone's on board with it. So once again, I'm looking at a trip from the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport to Stillwater, which is a long haul, by the way. I mean, that's, you know, if you know somebody, that's generally you're getting someone to come pick you up because, you know, that's going to be a bit of a drive. But let's just say someone's in town, they're doing an event out there, they're flying in. That's the case. All right. 29 miles is the distance. I just typed it into the computer here and it's 30 minutes. Now, put those numbers aside for a quick second. Once again, I want to make sure we understand I'm going to compare this to what they're currently, this is the agreement that Democrats and Republicans and the city council have come together with to put forward for the city of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and for the state for that matter. Once again, that is $1.27 per minute. Excuse me. I'm sorry. $1.27 per mile, $1.27 per mile and 49 cents per minute. Comparing that to the Lyft prices as they advertise themselves, that is basically 15 plus. Let's see, 27, it is 27 plus 15 is 42 cents extra per mile, and per minute is 22 cents. All right. So if you do the current Lyft rate from Minneapolis-St. Paul to Stillwater, that's $32.75, which I would say there's no way on the planet, if you're driving your own vehicle, that you could do that trip with any consistency and make any money with that rate. That's just if you know wear and tear on vehicles. I've did this once before myself. But looking at this from the improved rate standard, so you're looking at a total of 29 miles times 0.42 cents equals 12.18. So it'd be $12.18 more for the mileage on that. For 30 minutes, 30 times 0.22 is 6.6. So, and yeah. So you're looking at a difference of, 4, 1, I'm doing math in my head here. I'm doing, so it's $18.84 more than that. So 18.34 plus 32.75 equals, yeah, it should be $51. So you're saying to me that if I need to get from Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, because, and by the way, why did I not do this for downtown Minneapolis from the airport for Uber Lyft? Well, because I can jump on the light rail. The light rail picks up at the airport. That will take me right to downtown Minneapolis. And you take, you know, one transfer and you can go to from the airport to St. Paul. So that doesn't work. And so I started looking at major destinations, satellite areas, and that's why I picked Stillwater. So you're coming into Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. You have to go to the northeast side of town from the due south side of Minneapolis. And it's going to cost you a total of $51.09. Are you saying you don't come to Minneapolis-St. Paul and take that flight because it's going to cost you $18.84 more to take a rideshare from the airport to Stillwater? I will call bull on that argument. If you can't afford that, then you're sure not affording the flight. Let's just be honest about it. And you probably shouldn't be out there doing something in the effect, to the effect of driving across the, if you don't have the finances to do a $50 trip, you're probably not doing a $50 trip. You know what I mean? You're not sitting there and saying, well, I'm going to take a job in Stillwater and I live in Richfield and I'm going to take an Uber Lyft every time or a Lyft every time I want to go out there. That's highly impractical. That's basically $100 every day. So I don't know what you're getting paid to do out there, but it's probably not enough. And the reality is, so there, it's kind of impractical to think about this as like, you know, the people who drive like that. Well, that's a rarity, if anything. Sure, might somebody on a Saturday night, there's a band that they love that's playing at a Stillwater bar, and they live in Minneapolis, and they say, I want to go on out there and catch this, but I don't want to drive all the way out there. I want to have a few drinks, whatever the case may be. I'll take an Uber and Lyft. I think that if you said it's going to be $50, I don't think they're saying, well, I'm not going to go now. Because they're clearly going to go buy tickets. They're going to go buy drinks. I just honestly do not think that as Lyft and Uber are picking up all their toys and storming towards the door and demanding that Minneapolis-St. Paul cease to exist, because how dare you violate what we say we should be paying these drivers, their measly wages that they do unfold. I don't think that that's necessarily the deal breaker you think it is. And people that will sit there and they'll say, well, Matt, I mean, it's really easy for you to say $18 isn't a lot. No, $18 is a chunk of change. But it's not something that people are doing on a freaking daily basis, because who would be driving all the way out there? I mean, it'd be a $32. Even if it was without the wage increase, it'd be a $32.75 trip out there. Who's going on there every day, for goodness sakes, using an Uber Lyft driver? Exactly. These are one-time, usual, special occasions that they're doing something of that distance. I'm taking a flight into town. I'm returning the flight from someplace. I can't get anyone to come pick me up, so I need to do this one time. I don't think people are going to walk to Stillwater from Minneapolis-St. Paul International with their luggage because how dare they make me pay $18 more? I think at that point, it's $50. Fine, I'll just do the trip. I just was down in New Orleans, and I went down there. And the New Orleans airport is nowhere near downtown New Orleans. And so you had to take a trip over. I had no problem with that. I had no problem with that. And I tipped them well. I just think these guys are trying to scare people away from using this. Because once again, forget about the Minneapolis-St. Paul to Stillwater example I just did here. Let's just go back to the 4 mile trip, the 4 mile, 7 minute trip. That's $3 more one way. Who's going to sit there and say, oh, $3 whole, I'll walk the 4 hours, 4 miles. I'll see you in an hour and a half. No one's going to do that. And you know what? The drivers then get a livable wage. I think that there are, this is the greed factor of Uber and Lyft, basically trying to hope that people don't do the math like I just did and realize this is not exactly the greatest sacrifice. And it, by the way, and once again, it does not help their cause that we just had when they raised the minimum wage in Minneapolis, the same argument of no one's going to have a restaurant. Every business is going to close. It will be a ghost town. Remember that, you clowns? Nothing could be further from the truth. Minneapolis, St. Paul is packed with people, man. No, I'm sorry. This is and the fact that it's bipartisan, too. They got Abler on board with this thing. The fact that this is bipartisan, this seems like a decent deal. The city council signing off on it. The Republicans are signing off on it to a point. The Democrats are signing off on this. $1.27 per mile, 49 cents per minute. I think that that's doable. Get it done. And if Uber and Lyft want to, you know, take their toys and go home, let them. It's capitalism. They don't want to be here. Fine. We don't want them here. They can leave because have you not seen the list of services that want to come into Minneapolis, St. Paul? They are pretty massive. There's quite a few of them that want to try to get up and running. And once again, I look at the city of Minneapolis and the state of Minnesota, and if Uber and Lyft are going to throw their little temper tantrums, you need to light speed the approval process for these licenses so that these businesses can operate. That way, they can get their app information out there, they can get that advertised, people can get the new app, and they can ditch Uber and Lyft. My guess is going to be that Uber and Lyft are not going to leave Minneapolis-St. Paul. It's the 17th largest metro area in the country. We have a lot of people that come into town. And whereas people are not necessarily coming into town and going out to Stillwater constantly with a ride share from Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, they are going into Minneapolis. And if I can, let me just, what's the distance? There we go. MSP to downtown. The distance is 13 miles. 13 miles from the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport into downtown. So on my 4 mile, that's just, it'll be $9 more. I don't think anyone's not coming to Minneapolis-St. Paul because I was going to go there. I was going to fly there. I was going to get a hotel there. I was going to eat all these meals out. But then I discovered it was going to be $9 more to take an Uber lift from Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport to the downtown. I'm not wasting my money. Well, you weren't serious anyway, you clown. You weren't serious anyway. Pay the drivers a livable wage and show the rest of the world we don't need to basically forfeit the decency towards other human beings just because a corporate profit model might get tarnished. Because trust me, at the end of the day, Uber and Lyft are going to still make a ton of freaking money off this. This is just them basically being petty, at least in my opinion. 952, sorry for... Patrick, did you follow all the math content? There'll be a test later on. Make sure number two pencils are kept, okay? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
In constant sorrow.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. No, I'm going to go back to that thing because I think that point at the end kind of hits it home. You're going to spend all the money to fly to Minneapolis, right? You're going to fly here or take the train here. You're going to come to or take the bus here. Oh, I guess bus would be, you're looking for the real value buy. But you say you're flying to Minneapolis, you're taking the train to Minneapolis. You need to take an Uber Lyft from the wherever you get dropped off into downtown Minneapolis where your hotel is. When you're paying for a hotel, you're paying for tickets to whatever event you're coming to town for, you're paying for all your meals down here, and all of a sudden you see it's an extra $9 on Uber or Lyft. I'm not going. Sure. I'm not buying that. Not buying that at all. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Speaking of Stillwater, they are making a bid to host Minnesota's second social district. A new bill introduced Tuesday by GOP State Senator Karen, don't vote me out, Housley, could authorize the border city to follow Anoka's footsteps by allowing patrons to carry and drink boozy beverages between restaurants and bars. Wow. Housley, who lives in Stillwater, told Axios that an outdoor social district would further boost economic development in the popular tourist destination along the St. Croix River. You already do not have enough parking for the amount of people that are coming into that district. Now, my guess is going to be if you're going to have a street where people can drunkenly roam, you're going to have to shut down a street and you're going to have less parking? Come on. Our downtown is booming. It's a fun social place to be. It's very enjoyable. I like Stillwater. It's very nice. You could just be nice to be able to walk from a restaurant to restaurant carrying your drink. It's probably not going to pass because it's pretty late in the session to try to get one passed. Anoka officials have indicated Stillwater isn't the only city interested in joining the fun. Housley said she's already brought the idea to a relevant committee chairs in hopes of getting a language incorporated into a broader spending and policy bill before the legislature's May 20th adjournment. Last year, the legislature gave Anoka the green light to pilot a social district program. The North Loop, North Metro suburb, which launched a second summer-long trial of the concept on May 1st, is expected to report back to the legislature on how it went next year. Even if the Stillwater-specific bill does pass, city officials will still need to finalize and approve the program before it launches. Housley said she introduced a bill after confirming the city's interest. So, I am going to voice my concerns about this in Anoka and in Stillwater and any other community that wants to do this. Because I have been in enough communities where you have you ever been to a town where it's like the weekend festival, it's raspberry days, it's butternut squash days, it's you know, Rip and Riley days, whatever the case may be. And it always is the same thing. And the Friday night, there's some activities, then there's a beer hall and a beer tent and drinking. And then the next day, there's Saturday, there's a whole bunch of events, and then there's drinking that night. And then there's some events on Sunday, and usually it winds down. It's pretty bad sometimes, especially you get past 10 o'clock. It's always funny when they sell this idea. It's always the guy wearing a polo shirt, carrying a drink, going, aren't we having fun? Let's run over this way. It's not the guy who's stumbling down the street, urinating in front of a business, vomiting in the street. You know, it's not the restaurant saying, we've got the plastic cups you need. Come get 48 ounces of pure grain alcohol. It's not drunkenness on display. Now, once again, I was in New Orleans late last year in November. And that is probably the most common and popular street drinking setup they've got. And it's a mess. It's a mess. To say there is a specific odor to that city in the mornings is the understatement. The hardest working people in New Orleans are the people hosing down the streets at night. And you come out every morning and they've come through, the street cleaners have come through, the city cleaners have come through. But it's been rough. You know something happened there. You know, it's like going to a battlefield 10 years afterwards. You know something happened here. You have no idea what it was, but boy, you can sort of see the damage. For the record, I gave up alcohol 10 plus years ago. I don't drink. It has become more and more apparent to me every time I read one of these stories. Remember the story I read last week about the guy in Texas who opened fire on the pizza delivery driver because he stopped in the wrong driveway? And I said, alcohol. Absolutely. Guy was drunk as a skunk and had a gun. That's not a good combination. Stillwater, I mean, if you're out in the street, there is no, you know, there's no, you know, rules that say they can't, if you got a gun, you can't carry it. These things, they generally start off with this high idea of, well, we're going to have it out there. But the point is get people out there and get schnockered. And that's the case. And sometimes it's by design. You know, they want people to get schnockered so that they have the police, their local police department sitting outside in every major road ready to pull everyone over as they leave town. You clearly take a community like Stillwater or Anoka and you turn it into an adults-only venue. And sure, you'll say, well, people are going to spend money here. So I go up to Anoka occasionally. A few good restaurants up there. They got a nice Halloween parade, that's for sure. But I'm not going up there because it's the place to be. And Stillwater, and here's the problem with Stillwater. It's like, you guys have built a reputation that is kind of really nice, and you're packed to the gills. You sure you want to do this? Because it's going to definitely change the clientele quite a bit and change the image of Stillwater quite a bit. You know, I'm not sure if it's necessarily the path you want to go down. I'm not a fan of it personally, but that's just me. Native Roots Radio is up next. You have a good one. We are back on a Tuesday with Dr. Joe. Until then, see ya.